Hello everyone, and welcome to the first ever episode of the Yardstick of Civilization. This is the first podcast for me ever, actually. So, it's pretty much just me doing it by myself. And you're probably wondering, why the hell did you do a podcast all by yourself? I mean, isn't that the whole point? You talk to people, you know, kind of get things, bounce ideas off each other. Well, I guess you can say I'm not really one of those people, but at the same time I am. So, which is why I decided to have the brilliant idea of starting a podcast. How silly of me, right? Nah, I wanted to introduce myself. My name is Chris, but you guys, I'm sure, are going to be better as Never Fear I'm Here. Or, just call me Never Fear. Everyone else does. This podcast is called the Yardstick of Civilization because this will be the tool in which stone is measured. Well, to be honest, you have to store some pipe code, but hey, run around. So anyway, this podcast is sort of like a rough draft, you know, sort of to get myself out there to spread my wings and fly, if you will. I've only been doing the blogging thing for about a couple of months, and, you know, I've been keeping up with this for the most part. My Twitter account is doing pretty good. I've got 100 followers as of Sunday. It's Monday as I record this, so I don't know if it's got two more people added onto that list, but chances are, they're probably so, thank you all for following me on Twitter, listening to the ramblings of a quote-unquote admitted movie fandom. So, I really enjoy watching movies, and, you know, now I get a chance to talk about it in a more organized capacity. Now, before we get into the actual meat and potatoes of the conversation, I just want to point out something. You can go online where I am. I have a Facebook profile now, and I recently started a Facebook group called The Desert of the Rio. So I checked that one out. It just started. So it's kind of in the speech right now. I really don't know where we're going to go with that, but hopefully it will be something a little more substantial. And but if you don't check it out, there's always the Tumblr blog at youhave.nothingtofear.net, you know, which is also connected to my Twitter account at twitter.com/nothingtofearhere. I really don't have any movies at this point right now because I spent most of my time at the 2009 Florida Film Festival. And let me tell you, it was crazy. I mean, this place is straight movie nerds, movie geeks. Some people are way over here in their 60s, looking at like 10, 20 different movies. And this is my first time, too. You know, I had to go online, I had to get the passes, I had to get all that stuff. You know, just so I could be sure to go through as many fucking movies as I could. And you would not believe the amount of people who come to see these types of movies. I mean, there were independent films, short films, documentaries. You know, there was even a Jennifer Aniston movie. I'll get into that later. But I gotta tell you, my whole experience going to the festival was one of revelation and experience that I probably won't forget for a long time. I did do a lot of stuff there. I went to see the opening night film, which was the aforementioned Jennifer Aniston movie called Management. Now, before I get into any of these movies, I want to let you guys know that I will not be spoiling any one of these films. I'll probably give like a general discussion about them, just to sort of give you an idea of what they're about. point other than that, I won't get into specifics of plot and characters and things like that. Because I want you to see these movies, because these movies are great. You know, not a lot of people get to see them. They pretty much just coast the festivals until they end up in the bargain bin at Walmart or, you know, pushed aside next to that copy of The Grudge 4 in Netflix queue. You know who you are. So, but yeah, the opening night film was on March 27th, and it was Magic, starring Jennifer Aniston and Steve Zahn. Yeah, I know, that's Steve Zahn. So, that film was all over the place, pretty much. I mean, in terms of tone, style, it was supposed to be very romantic comedy, then it turns into, like, a really sick version of Silence of the Lambs. There was all kinds of crap just in that movie, and I could not kind of gauge what direction it was. I mean, once you see Woody Harrelson, you know, pop up there and hit the role, you know the movie's either going in two ways. He's going to go the way of the dog or the way of the gun, you know. And either way, it's not a good way. You put it that way. So I sat there, and I was really shocked that the short film that preceded this film, called Western Spaghetti, which was only about 3-4 minutes long, had me more emotionally invested in what was going on than the entire 90 minutes of this movie. I'll admit it, I was laughing. I laughed a few moments, most of them involving Woody Harrelson and an Asian dude who apparently has an impeccable Italian/New York Brooklyn accent. Don't ask. But this guy was funny, and he was consistent. And Steve Zahn surprised the hell out of me, because I thought after only like Saving Silverman and, you know, all the other crap he's done, I figured this guy is really bad. He's gonna be fucking Jason Bates, Graham, whatever, and something. But, you know, he really surprised me with this movie, and as much as he surprised me, Jennifer Aniston really surprised me, because she's able to handle some of the more heavy-handed, dramatic moments that I'm putting drama in quotation marks, because I didn't know whether to laugh or cry or just say, you know what, fuck this, you know. So, I gotta tell you, it was hitting this for me. More mental than this, but it's not bad, it's just okay. And like I said, I was mostly invested in a movie in which stop motion animation was depicting the making of spaghetti using dice and dollar bills than 90 minutes of Jennifer Aniston and Steve Zahn just trying to find love in all the places. And I want to tell you, that sucks. It really does. But the best part was after the movie, when we got to the party, which had some of the best food I've ever tasted in my life. Now, I'm not really all for the fancy stuff, you know, the little portions of like that tiny, like, where the hell is the real food? Give me some steak and eggs, goddammit, okay? Because that is what I want. But this is a little bit more interesting, because they had something called like chickpea cake and some kind of foie gras and passion stuff, and it was all so good. So good, and I kept going back for more. But the thing of it is, apparently, people at the MGM Theater, which is where one of the theaters where it was being held, doesn't believe in the concept of recycling. So there was an entire table where I sat at. I sat at this table. I was really just sitting at a chair, because I was being able to sit for a bit and eat. And right next to me was the table, and the entire table, I shit you not, the entire fucking table was covered in plates and utensils, and there was even food on some of them. And I'm like, my God. You know, but luckily, you know, the volunteers, they were all so good with it, and it was clear I messed up without any trouble. So I'm really grateful that they were able to keep up with the mess that people were making. But you know what? So anyway, so that I was great. So anyway, on the second day of Christmas, my jeweler gave me the beginning, official beginning, of the Florida Film Festival. I'm really tight. Some of these movies, a lot of these movies that I saw, were awesome. I mean, they had over 160 short films, parties, they had Q&A sessions, they had filmmaking forums, they had something called a stop by shoot film where you get to like handle the cameras and everything like that. It was very, very sort of hands on. A lot of celebrities came down to spend the weekend at the film festival. I remember opening weekend, Kat Core, the only female Iron Chef, came down. She did a little thing, designing food, because that's what she does. And let me tell you, she's not bad looking. I think she's pregnant, being pregnant, or in the process of impregnation or something, but she looks radiant. I mean, I saw her in a dress opening night, and let me tell you, that ain't not bad. Okay? So, and apparently she has a Twitter account, so, which I'm following, so. Fingers crossed. Anyway, back to the movies. One of the first movies I saw during the opening weekend was a movie called Battle for Terra. Now, this is an animated film, which I had not heard of until I picked up the pamphlet and read the synopsis. It has a really, really obvious environmental message, but not in that sort of heavy-handed, happy feet sort of way, which is like, we're going to have an animated cartoon, and then all of a sudden, message! This is the message of the movie! You know, pollution is bad. You know, it's like a teacher from South Park was like, pollution is bad. You know, throw away trash in the street is bad. You know, and it's like that heavy hint. It was obviously there, and it kind of wove into the story a bit. It had a lot of pretty good voice talent for me. You know, Luke Wilson and Brian Cox and Evan Rachel Wood and the whole, and even Dennis Quaid was there, which surprised me a little bit. He has a good voice for an animated character. And it was surprisingly good. I mean, it was some of the more, I wouldn't say adult cartoon, but more, definitely more teen-oriented, you know, and there was action, and there's definitely some drama. Think of it like, think of it like Ants, you know, an anime cartoon, but it's more of a movie sort of base, like, it's Ants more a Pixar film, essentially. Yeah, that's how I'll put it. And, so, Battle of Terra, pretty good animated film. Hopefully it'll come in theaters, and it's supposed to be in real D 3D, which I kind of, you know, didn't realize until I saw the poster. So, when that happens, I'll see it again in 3D. That should be fun. Let's see, what else did I say? Oh, yeah! What I saw on that Saturday, one of my favorite films, in fact, I'm going to say, this was my favorite film of the festival. It was a movie called Fear Sings the Blues. And this movie is fucking fantastic. I mean, this is also an animated film, but it's kind of like Dr. Katz meets Home Movies sort of animation style. It's based off the story of the Ramayana. Yeah, I think I got that right. The Ramayana. And it was one of the absolute best films I've ever watched and in the festival. And it's like half autobiography. It's about this woman called, not called, but named Nina Paley. And you can look at everything for this movie. Shit everything but like star in it, you know? And I think she starred in it. Pretty much everything she did. I mean, she did the animation herself, which let me tell you, it's not easy. And she had she had jazz music from like the 1930s by a singer called Annette Henshaw. And it's so well good. You know, the music obviously draws attention to itself, and but not in a way it was just like self-referential or just like pop culture. I mean, this movie was awesome. And you know, when you find out what happened in this woman's life and how she came across the Ramayana and sort of wove into her own tale of heartbreak, it is really, really effective. And the music, especially in the opening sequence, is truly, truly breathtaking. I mean, the composer for the film was Todd Michelson, and I have to give him kudos for coming up with such an awesome, awesome score. And I also have to give props to the three sort of sirens, if you will, the narrators of the film. They were hilarious as all hell. If anyone is listening to this podcast and saw this movie, you know exactly what I'm talking about. I absolutely love this movie, and I highly, highly recommend it. No joke. No joke. I also saw that day a movie called The Burning Flame. Now, this is the directorial debut of writer Guillermo Arriaga. I probably totally butchered that name, but yeah. I'm playing fast and loose here, so help me out, people. So this is his directorial debut. He wrote Emerald's Palace and 21 Grams and Babel. You know, he worked a lot with Iñárritu, and you know, well, of course they have thrown out, and now he's sort of ventured into the world of directing. And this movie was one of the more darker sort of things. You know, you gotta hand it to Arriaga. He always does the sort of time fuck, you know. It makes Lost look like a fucking puzzle piece because, you know, the way this movie jumps from one point in time to another is surprisingly less confusing than, say, 21 Grams, but it's done in such a way that you kind of follow it, and it makes it charge you even more to alienating you, because having a gimmick like time jumping can oftentimes sort of say, fuck this movie, you know? But it was surprisingly effective, and Arriaga, you know, certainly has a way with actors that I didn't think he would have, but in this particular instance, you know, where most of the action is, well, pretty much all of the action is character-driven, he did it very, very good. And, you know, Charlize Theron and a few people like Joaquin de Almeida from 24 and Kim Basinger is in it as well. And there are a couple of people who are like new to movie making. You know, a few people may not have heard of from that, but it was very good and I highly recommend it. If it ever comes to like one theater in your town, please see this movie because it will not disappoint you. You know, it may kind of take a while for you to get the mystery, but I guarantee you, this movie will have you saying, I want to see more films by this man. So, watch The Burning Flame, please, please, please. And another one is a movie which I had never, ever seen, but I had heard of before. I mean, I had it on my Netflix queue for, like, the longest time. I had, like, 100
had like 150 films in my Netflix queue, and it was like number 105 or some weird number like that. And it was Crimes of Passion. A movie called Crimes of Passion starring Kathleen Turner. Yep, that movie. And it happened to be an evening with Ken Russell and screenwriter Barry Sandler. Oh, sorry, Barry Sandler. I keep saying Sadler, I don't know why. I mean, you say Sadler, I say Sandler. And you would probably be wrong. If I was wrong, too. So it's Barry Sandler, who coincidentally is a screenwriting teacher over at UCF, which I did not know, but now it's good to know. Because, you know, it's nice to have someone like that doing that type of work. And he's like in his 60s now, and... Let me tell you, when I was at that screening, Ken Russell, God bless him, he's done some crazy shit in his time, but this movie takes the fucking cake. I mean, you know, this screening has a rare 35mm print on the X-rated version of this film, and there are only two, from what I've heard, there's only two of it in existence. Two. And one of them had to be shown there that night. And I was lucky enough to see it. And it looked surprisingly good. You know, the print was, it wasn't pristine or anything like that. It wasn't Blu-ray worthy. But it was pretty clean. You know, for a movie that had been cut like 6 or 7 times. So, it was great to see that, you know, with a bunch of people. And the audience was pretty packed too. I mean, I wouldn't say it was sold out, but it was damn near close. I hadn't actually thought about mine because Crimes of Passion is out on DVD, so I figured I'd just watch it on my Netflix and move it up to like number 3. But, you know, how many times do I get to sit down with the filmmakers? You know, especially being my first rodeo, I figured I'd go out there and do it. So I went there and done all that stuff. It was great. I mean, Ken and Barry, they are old and decrepit people, but they're very smart. Especially Ken Russell. You know, obviously he's got long years. He's full on old man, but he's also full on old British man. So, you know, there's a bit of dry humor in the audience. So, you know, for a movie with a guy that's rating, right? Like nobody's business. I mean, I wanted to ask him about what did you think of Kathleen Turner now? Because if you've seen Kathleen Turner movie Marrying Me, she does not look like the woman in Crimes of Passion. Because the woman in Crimes of Passion is actually quite attractive. You know, that husky, I smoked way too many cigarettes voice apparent. But she was bothering, she was naked in that movie. You know, she was a prostitute, and, you know, prostitutes like to get naked every now and then, you know, for the right price. And, who would have thought Anthony Perkins was in another movie where he would be dressed up as a woman? I had no idea, because the minute I saw that, I was like, psycho. And I wanted to ask that question too, but I didn't. You know, it was just nice to be there amongst fellow film geeks and sort of just revel in it. So I was going to watch this. And it was fucked up. I mean, I recommend that movie to anyone who's like extremely not right in the head. So. Watch that movie, rent it, like it, love it. I wasn't totally in love with it, but it is my kind of movie, you know? I'm into that weird shit. So, it moved me in a way in that I hadn't been moved since I had used the bathroom about 5 hours before. So, and I've seen a lot, you know, there's a lot. There was over 160 movies, and I honestly couldn't see them all. You know, I saw a bunch of short films along the way. I saw Treeless Mountain was another one that I saw that I really liked. And it's basically a movie about two Korean children, sisters, who basically are abandoned by their mom. You know? And it's not a terribly original concept, you know? There's been a lot of films like that which have dealt with abandonment. But this film, for some reason, I don't know if it was the setting or was because the sort of pitch-perfect way the actors, the child actors, who have really never acted in a movie before, sort of had you, and what a good job that they did having you. And it's very minimalistic in a way that sort of aids the film, because, you know, you're basically following these people, these children, throughout this sort of, you know, time in their lives where the mother's basically saying, I can't take care of you, I'm going to leave you with someone else. And it really is good. I mean, a lot of people were like, subtitles? That's bad. I don't like subtitles. But, you know, the festival is the perfect place to sort of showcase a film like this, where people certainly have a real appreciation for it. And I really like that about the festival. And so when I watched Treeless Mountain, I wasn't watching with a bunch of people who would not get it, who didn't like reading movies and such. I was there with people who really sort of understood, you know, what the movie was trying to do. Never mind the fact that you had to basically read the entire fucking movie. But it really, really drew. It could have been a silent film, you know, and it still took me. But other than that, I mean, there were a lot of stuff that I saw that was worth mentioning. I mean, I saw a bunch of shorts, and some of it was actually playing in front of other films, which was a nice touch because, you know, you can't fight City Hall, so why not have City Hall come to you? And, you know, with all these movies showing you, there's a slight chance you're going to miss some. And that's okay, because it's really just a showcase, and you get to see as many as you can, as much as you can. And so, we had seen a movie called The Way We Get By, and we were impressed. We mean me, myself, and I, you know, we were impressed by how good that movie is. It's not a movie, it's a documentary about these three people who are greeters and Bangor Minion, and they stay there, and they greet the troops that come home. They actually stay there, well, they don't stay there, they don't stay there, so they're not kicked out like homeless people. But these are like senior citizens, some of them are like 60, 65 years old, and they go down there. Every time the troops come home, they come there and greet them, and they spend their time talking to these people, and they give them, even give them phones so they can call their moms, their girlfriends, their dads, their booty calls and stuff like that, because, you know, you've been over there for like a year and a half, you gotta get the booty. I mean, seriously, you know, to be on the phone, be like, hey, I'm gonna call this girl, she puts out, alright, don't judge me. You know, at one point in the film, someone actually says, this is where Stephen King lives, you know, which is not really spoiled, because I'm pretty sure people know that Stephen King lives in Maine, but it was just funny to hear that for the first time. And, you know, I recommend that movie. I think there's a website for it, but don't quote me on that. But yeah, check it out. and be sure to watch it with someone who knows someone who knows someone who's been in that situation, because it's really important that people know that there's someone out there who doesn't have some of the agenda when it comes to the war, that is here to support the troops, the people who are out there fighting. So, you know, be sure to catch that whenever it shows, because I highly recommend that one. Now, when it comes to forums, it is time like this that I want you to know that short films should never be underestimated. There was a group of shorts that I saw called Deer on Fire. And one of the best one, I should say, is a short film called Memphis Calling, which has Craig Jackson from Jack and Mary Porno, The Office, Pineapple Express, and that dude was amazing. You know, he played an inmate who makes a call to this pregnant lady, and they talk for pretty much the whole movie. And as much as he does a good job and the woman does a good job, it's really like the last couple of minutes that really gets you. So if you ever see this movie, if you ever see this short film anywhere, stay for the whole thing. Even if it's the last one, and you're going to miss like some other movie that's playing in the background, I suggest you go down and watch this movie for the last couple of minutes, because it really sold the soul for me. It really sold Craig Jackson as someone who does more than, help people to film pornos. So, it was a joy to see that one, and I'm glad I caught it. There's so many here that I saw that obviously I can't get to them all, because I mean, it would mean having like an entire podcast dedicated to these types of things. And I really want to sort of get to some of the other stuff that I want to talk about, so that you get an idea of what this podcast will be in the future. Some of the highlights. I saw 500 Days of Summer. The film starring Zoe Deschanel and Joseph Gordon-Levitt. And why the fuck aren't more romantic comedies done like this? I mean, like I was saying earlier with The Burning Plain, it has a very unconventional way of telling the story. But the story, as it is told, works for that particular device. And so this film is very simple, you know. Guy meets girl, guy hooks up with girl, you know, eventually blah blah blah, they break up. But it's told in little bits and pieces. Like, you'll see this part first, and then you sort of go back, and then you sort of go forward, and you know, you think, why are we watching like this? And then once you finish the movie, you realize, whoa, I was really shocked by that. You know, I was really surprised by how good that movie was. And I was too. I mean, I'm glad I got to see what I did, because now I got that out of it. And I really hope it plays in more than 6 theaters, because, you know, people should see this movie, and I know Fox Searchlight has it, and they've done such a good job with Little Miss Sunshine, and, they did such a good job with Phone Dollar Millionaire, you know, and Juno, Fox Searchlight is on the roll, and now that they have 500 Days of Summer, I really think they're going to push this film like it's going to be tomorrow. I mean, Fox, Tony's the new Fox, but we're a little something from Fox, that's why. Is that this is how you do movies. And I agree. Even though they didn't produce the movie, they're just distributing it. Distributing the film. I hope they give it the attention it deserves. And don't just show it as some shallow romantic comedy with a laugh track in the background. Yeah. So try and catch that movie at every single film festival you can, because I was glad it came here when it did. I watched it. I got it out of the way. It's all good. I think there's a few more left here that I saw that was worth mentioning. Obviously, there's two other Q&As other than the ones that I saw at the Florida Film Festival, which was with John Voight, and they screened Midnight Cowboy. So I see Midnight Cowboy on the big screen. And I also saw Fatal Attraction with one Miss Glenn Close from Damages. Love it. I mean, that one was one for the ages, ladies and gentlemen, because it was sold the fuck out. You know, if you didn't get a seat there, if you didn't get to see it, you missed some awesome stuff. You know, and the John White one was sold out as well, and he wore the jacket from Midnight Cowboy, which was great. And, you know, they both are excellent actor slash actress. You know, both of them work in television now, going close on Damages, and which I will be reviewing near the end of this podcast. I'll be reviewing the 90-minute season finale, along with some oversights on season 2 of Damages. So stay tuned for that. And John Voight is on 24 now, and let me tell you, that guy's acting career is fucking crazy. I mean, this guy on 24, you know, he should have his own clock. You know, be like, honey, what kind of stuff is this? Do 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 do. You know, Angelina, what kind of music here? Do 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 do. So if you ever get to go to the Q&A, you know, make time for that, because more than likely, there's going to be a bunch of other people who are going to see that. And there's a reason for that, because usually they get someone pretty big, you know. And it was an honor to sort of sit there and watch those movies with those people and be like, wow, just fucking wow. And there was also a couple of other documentaries that I think are worth mentioning, and then I'll move on to my other items that I want to get to. Let's see. There was the Up With People documentary, Smile Till It Hurts. Now, Up With People was sort of these kind of group of, you know, young, clean-cut, fresh-faced kids who sang about peace and love. You know, the Parker family, before the Parker family was popular. So, they eventually went from being the, you know, happy, hooray for everything, we love peace and happiness and joy, to the butt of the joke, you know. They made fun of pretty much everyone, you know, Up With People. I mean, that itself is a great point. And it was equal parts disturbing and compelling and sort of enlightening too. I mean, the best part for me was seeing a 5-second clip of Glenn fucking Close in doing a reading at the Up With People camp, which in and of itself is pretty cool. And I was waiting. I was waiting for someone to ask the question about her time with other people, and it didn't come. Which is kind of sad, because I would love to see that blow up her face. You know, but I just saw this movie about other people, and you were in it. So, let's put that. You know? So, it was great to see, you know, like, a super uber famous celebrity involved with those people. And, speaking of that, some of the cast members who were involved with other people were there at the screening that I was at. And that itself was pretty cool, because I guess it was sort of a reunion of sorts to see, you know, old, really old Upper People members in the audience, which I didn't even know were there. You know, there were people like Upper People shirts, and, you know, they were singing the songs like Freedom Is Free, and it was, it left a bad taste in my mouth. But, taste nonetheless, and that was the point. So, I think that about covers it for the Florida Film Festival. I mean, all of my experiences there being at the films, the general atmosphere was pretty cool. I got to sit down with the, at the awards banquet, and, not banquet, but brunch, you know, that period between breakfast and lunch, you know, that's such a terrible word, brunch. Anyway, I got to see there, and Chris Gore from Film Threat was there. And he looks much younger in person, I gotta say. So he came along and, you know, was a moderator. And he was also there at the Filmmaker Forum. And I also went to, what's it called, the New Business in Frontier something, or other. You know, I went to a few stuff, and I met a few interesting people there. One of the people I met was someone who I had been tweeting with on my Twitter account, and that was Mr. Brian Quinn from BeforeYouSubmit.com. Now, he's actually a pretty cool guy. I mean, I talked with him for like all 2 minutes, and he seemed generally excited to see me. Of course, he probably met pretty much anyone who was tweeting with him at the festival, but it was nice to finally meet someone whose only means of communication with them is to type 140 characters or less. So that was a really cool experience for me to meet someone like that, and I thank Mr. Quinn for taking the time out of his busy schedule to talk with me for a few minutes before moving. So I hooked up with a few people and talked with some really old ladies, and the lines were very, very long for a lot of these movies. I mean, people really, really wanted to see them, and even if they were bad, you know, they just wanted to see something that wasn't Fast and Furious or Monsters vs. Aliens or some other something other. But yeah, I had a really good time, and I'm hoping to do it again next year. I'm hoping to go to a few more festivals this year. I'm definitely going to Comic-Con, so, you know, I've got my things all set to go, and I'm just waiting for the word. So, I think that about does it for my experiences at the 2009 Florida Film Festival. And all in all, you know, there may be 3 F's in the title, but that festival definitely gets A. I mean, it's very, what's the word? User-friendly, you know? People there are very nice, and, you know, they're very knowledgeable film, and, you know, if you have a question, they can answer it to the best ability. And I really really hope that those guys I run into again. Hopefully Mr. Green will be around and we'll run into each other on another festival. So I was really glad to meet someone involved in, you know, the blogosphere. So, because I'm just starting out and, you know, starting this podcast and everything, you know, in me says that, you know, network, network, network. Get yourself out there. So, MetaBot does this for the 2009 Florida Film Festival Insights and Highlights, or as I like to call it, Adventures in Festivaling. It's not a word, so don't try looking it up, okay? Okay. So, I want to talk a little bit about a few things that have been on my mind since I started doing the whole Twitter thing, and I wanted to sort of put myself out there and put my own opinions out there and feel free to disagree with me or agree with me or tell me you're a hack, go have sexual relations with yourself, you know, which I would do, but I don't mean taking more yoga classes, and I just don't have the flexibility for that, you know, so I'll have to come back to you on that one. But for now, I want to chat with you about something that has been weighing really heavily in my mind. And I think it's about time I get off my chest and let you guys know about it. All the fucking remakes and reimaginings and reboots and re-ups and re-downs and re-sideways and all these crap that has been percolating through our system since the dawn of fucking hell. I mean, come on, really? I mean, I like Vin Diesel in parts, but do we really need a Fast and Furious 4? I mean, new model, original parts? Sorry, folks, it's the same model and same parts. Exactly the same parts. Okay? Just because you have Jordana Brewster and Sarias and a bunch of borderline lesbian hot chicks does not a good movie make. I mean, seriously. I mean, who are we trying to fool? I mean, the last one had Vin Diesel for like 5 seconds. So, are we to believe that by just throwing pretty much everyone into the frying pan, we get fire? No. We don't. We absolutely do not. And I really don't think that, you know, just because you bring everyone back, it's automatic to make it a good movie. It makes it an interesting movie because Vin Diesel normally doesn't do sequels like Triple X or Pacifier or, what was that one movie? Oh, yeah, Pitch Fucking Black. You know what I'm saying? Because he has integrity. You know, he has charisma and lets people like Ice Cube take his place. Yeah. Good job, Steve. And all this is like Quantum of Solace. What happened to that movie? What happened to Quantum of Solace? I mean, Casino Royale was such a good movie. Such a good Bond movie, you know. And once you can once you reboot it, it cannot be unrebooted. You know? You can't say, okay, but we've gone back to the drawing board. Now let's erase the board and draw something else. Because it's not going to work again. But don't give me pieces of shit like Quantum Solace. Don't do that. Don't play with my emotions. Because I will hunt you down and I will kill you. Okay? You know? And find some decent fucking villains, you know. The last guy cried blood. You know, this guy cries like a bitch. And I don't like my villains crying like bitches, okay? That's not cool. It's uncool. Very uncool. And a hotel in the middle of the fucking desert, there's nothing ominous about that at all. And And, oh my god, I'm sick of the fucking remakes. I'm sick of them, okay? About 2-3 years ago, we had an entire genre which was filled with nothing but fucking sequels and remakes and reimaginings. Pirates of the Caribbean 3, Ocean 13, you know, it made me sick to my stomach. Like, I had seen them before. And you know why? Because they were already fucking made. It's essentially just, you know, tweak the formula a bit. You know, and I hate movies like that. I hate movies that don't even try. So I'm going to say, hey, let's take the same thing and repackage it over and over again. You know, if we can have like 6 or 7 Nightmare on the Streets and 13 Friday the 13th movies, I mean, we can put that Leprechaun in fucking space. We can make a decent horror film, okay? You know, just because a horror film has sex and violence and drugs and things I actually like in it, this does not make it a good movie. It doesn't. It just makes it a good movie without the sex and drugs and violence. Okay? And as much as I'm all for fast cars and faster women, I would really like something like story and plot and character development in my movies. Thank you very much. Because, you know, there have been some really good remakes, you know, like The Thing. You know, Get Smart was an okay adaptation of a TV show. But, you know, don't hand me this shit like Ocean's 12, okay? Ocean's 11, the remake of Ocean's 11, was actually not a bad film. It actually wasn't. I enjoyed the hell out of that movie. Ocean's 12 should not have fucking happened at all, okay? No way. I mean, you have an entire plot point. Don't even fucking get me started on this plot point. But I have to say it. Julia Roberts is playing a character who happens to look like Julia fucking Roberts. So in order to trick Bruce Willis, who was played by Bruce Willis, in case no one caught that, she has to pretend to be Julia Roberts while at the same time looking like Julia Roberts. Excuse me? Do you still need to find that clever and interesting and funny? No. It's retarded. Oh, sorry. It's the most mentally charged thing I've ever heard of. Is that better? Okay? Good. Because, God. And then, just last summer was The Mummy Tomb of Dreading Emperor. Okay? Obviously taking a page out of National Treasure and sort of ripping off the Indiana Jones franchise, which is a good thing to do, but not a good thing to do if you can't do it right. I mean, you have Rob Cohen, who does the Fast and the Furious, XXX, you know, he did some stuff on Bird on the Wire. You know, he was involved in the Running Man. I mean, do you see where I'm going with this? Do you see where I'm going with this? Like, if you put Rob Cohen behind the camera, chances are, it's either going to be entertaining or entertaining shit. Okay? Because this man cannot direct a single class. You know, that whole thing alone when Jet Li is turning into the mummy, just got to be one of the worst pieces of CGI I've ever seen in my life. Okay? And, you know, Maria Bello, what happened to you, dear? Because you cannot do a British accent at all. I mean, fire your dialect coach. Fire anyone who tries to tell you that you can do an accent, because you can't. You really can't. And don't even try, because I've heard you try, and you're not trying. So you're not hurting anyone, okay? And Alfred Goth and Miles Miller, these series, these are the same people who wrote Shanghai Nights. They try, but they didn't try this one. It felt like they took another script from someone else and put the words of the movie Tomb of the Dragon in common and said, hey, we wrote that. It feels like a script from an episode of Smallville, you know, Clark Kent meet up the mummy. You know? And it's so stupid. I hate that movie with passion. And then there's the X-Files. The X-Files, I want to believe. You know what I want to believe? I want to believe there can be a good X-Files movie. And that actually happened, and it was called Fight the Future. And I actually own the Blu-ray of X-Files Fight the Future. You know why? Because that movie was actually a good X-Files movie. X-Files, I want to believe, it's not a good X-Files movie. It is the complete opposite of an X-Files movie. It is a horrible piece of garbage. And I would not wipe my ass with it or use it as a coaster for my drinks. Okay? Because this movie should not have been made. It was clearly affected by the writer's strike. But after the writer's strike ended, they should have gone back to the drawing board and say, you know what? Maybe it wasn't the best idea to have this storyline. You know what? Maybe it wasn't the best idea to have another Pete as the world's most dumbest FBI agent ever. She's retarded, and I'm glad she died. And I know it's a spoiler, but I'm glad she fucking died. And she died a horrible death. I'm glad. Because she was dumb as fuck. And I couldn't believe they put her in that. Oh man, you cannot believe the shit they put out these days. I mean, Death Race? Like, I remember watching Death Race 2000 and be like, I would love to run over little kids, you know, and shoot people and pedestrians. This movie did not make me want to feel that way. It didn't want to say, hey, random prison gun, why don't you go over there and rape kids with the face of the ass? Now that will be entertaining than watching Transformers 3, okay? Because I like it. I actually like it. They smash abs on top of abs on top of abs. But the man cannot choose a project to save his life. I mean, you're talking about a man who says he wants to do Daredevil. Which would be the most awesomest thing ever in the history of awesomeness. But it's not gonna happen, because Jason Statham is stuck in Loop the Summer Land, and in Loop the Summer Land, there is no escape. I mean, Mila Jovovich got there like Stanley Keith, you know, and, Bridget Fonda was in Chasing the Dragon, and, has anyone seen Bridget Fonda since? I don't think so. And, Jet Li, but let's not tell it Jet Li. He just went off across the entire Hidden Dragon 2. That's what I'm just saying. You know? And so, what I'm trying to say is, what is wrong with these people? Like, do we really want to see a Godfather in Part 4? You know? Do we want to see Boogeyman 3? I mean, is that really a franchise? Is that really something people actually like watching? Because I don't like watching that. I mean, The Grudge 3 is coming out soon. It's going straight to fucking video. And there's a reason it's going straight to fucking video. And it's because no one wants to see The Grudge 3. Nobody. I don't care who you are. I don't care what kind of world you live in. No one in their right fucking mind wants to see a Grudge 3. No one. And you know what? I wouldn't want to see a Grudge 3. I wouldn't want to see Grudge 2. And Grudge 2 was garbage. Okay, I said it. And you know who else is ruining sequels and remakes on? I don't think it's one of them that I want to see. Because those guys ruined... I'll forever lament those guys for ruining The Legend of Zorro. Because The Mask of Zorro was actually a good movie. And I enjoyed the hell out of The Mask of Zorro. You know? I have the Blu-ray, I have the 2D, I have pretty much every version of The Mask of Zorro that they made. And it is a good movie. I would really enjoy that movie. I watch it every now and then, it cheers me up. It's a love him, Zorro, I can't watch it. You know, even though the director Martin Campbell, one of my favorite directors, he did Casino Royale, he did GoldenEye, you know, he did a lot of good stuff. Although, Vertical Limit, I'm not sure about. But he did a lot of stuff. But Kurtzman and Orsi gave him this really, really shitty script. And I don't know why, but they're doing Transformers, and they did Equal Eye, and now they're doing Star Trek. I mean, for one thing, Star Trek, it looks pretty good. But that's mostly production, direction, and stuff like that. You know, the writing is where it all starts. And if the writing is bad, then it doesn't matter how pretty it looks. You know, a polished turd is still a turd. It just looks pretty on the outside. Okay? So I don't know what to think of Star Trek. On the one hand, I'm really excited because it looks nothing like the Star Trek of old, which excites me and scares me at the same time. And on the other hand, I know that Kurtzman and Robert Orsi did have a hand in this and made it Transformers. Enough said. So, all in all, I'm really worried about the state of movies and remakes because, you know, they already did Friday the 13th, and that was garbage. They already did The Last House on the Left, garbage. They're going to do a Man on Elm Street. That is a big question mark for me because now they've cast Jackie Earle Haley as Freddy Krueger. Which is a pretty good casting choice. But at the same time, you can't forget that this is essentially a Nightmare on Elm Street. And one thing you don't fuck with is people who are already icons. And that's another thing that pisses me off. Is that these movies that suck. I mean, nobody's clamoring to see a remake of Catholic Schoolgirls in Trouble. You know, nobody wants to see a remake of, the Pirate 3 movie or something like that, the X-Men Pirate film. You know, people want to see a remake of a movie that people like. You know, old classic, movie that people watch. But nobody wants to watch these movies because they suck. You know? I mean, if Vin Diesel can make a couple of video games, then anyone can do anything at any time. So let's try, people. Let's find something original. Go to a festival. Do what I did. See some movies that people actually have an interest in. That people actually try and be original. You know, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But that's called trial and error. You try. You fail, you try again. Then if you don't like it, work on it some more. Because that's what's hard to process, okay? And if you can come up with something original, if you try to come up with an execution of something that's already been done 500 times in a row, then do it. You know? Because I'm tired, honestly. I'm tired of seeing all these fucking remakes. I'm tired of seeing the same movie over and over again and again. Tired of it. You know, just once. I want to see the other one try. Just once. Please, for me, for your review, just try. Just fucking